Today's edition of the Capital Daily Podcast is brought to you by Acupuncture Therapy. Book before October 31st and get 20% off your first visit. Visit acupuncturetherapy.ca for more details. Introducing the Capital Daily's Weekly Photo Challenge. Each week, our team will post a weekly photo theme in Monday's Capital Daily newsletter, as well as announcing it right here on the podcast, with winners receiving gift cards to local Victoria businesses around town. This week's theme is Halloween, where we are asking for photos of your best decor, costumes, or spooky places around the island. To enter, simply email us your photo or post it directly to your own social media account. For more details, check out Monday's Capital Daily newsletter. Hi, I'm Ben Waterworth, and welcome to the Capital Daily Podcast for Tuesday, October 27th, 2020. Today in the podcast.
So we're talking about a case of absolute magnitude, and she described it to me as like an onion. There are just so many layers to this case.
We chat with Capital Daily reporter Anna J. James about the latest from her upcoming investigative piece into the disappearance of Michael Dunahy and just what new information she has found. Months ago on the Capital Daily podcast, we spoke with Capital Daily reporter Anna J. James about her upcoming investigation into the disappearance of Michael Dunahy. Next year will mark 30 years since the disappearance of Dunahy in Victoria, a case that still lives deep in the psyche of many Victorians. As Anna continues to research and investigate the case, some of her recent discussions have revealed some interesting information about the case and just how it is still being looked into all these years later. And to discuss these new revelations, it's a pleasure to welcome back to the Capital Daily Podcast, Anna J. James. Anna, thanks once again for your time today.
Hi, Ben.
Now, Anna, we had you on a couple of months ago, of course, talking about your investigation in the lead up to the anniversary of the Michael Dunahy disappearance. And throughout this investigation, you've been speaking to several people, and I believe you've got some new insight into this case after talking with a detective working on this case. Let us know what's happened here.
So I've been in contact with Detective Sergeant Michelle Robertson. Now, Detective Robertson is the one person cold case unit who's currently on Michael Dunahy's case. She's currently working his case. Now, Detective Robertson has quite a large caseload. As we know, police resources are very stretched. So she has 33 cases that include unsolved homicides, missing persons with foul play, and long-term missing persons, which includes, of course, Dunahy. Now, she has received over 25,000 tips. There are over 25,000 tips on file in Michael Dunahy's disappearance alone. So we're talking about a case of absolute magnitude. And she described it to me. She's like, it's like an onion. There are just so many layers to this case. So basically, she's still getting tips.
You talk about 25,000 tips. Are they still coming in regularly? Is this something that's still to this day? She's getting tips on a regular basis?
Yes, Detective Robertson said, I work on that case every single day. She still gets tips and from all over the world, she said, US, UK. And I do want to take a moment to say that Detective Robertson was very firm in saying that she can't actually, because it's an active case, she can't actually explain the specifics of it, but she did take me through her kind of process and the case in kind of a general term. And I think it's quite fascinating that she's the only person in the cold case unit and responsible for such a huge task. She said one of the main challenges of this case is that it was about 30 years ago, and it's the sheer volume of information. You know, sometimes in these cases, you could have too much information. She said of the over 25,000 tips, a lot of them are repeats. So when you think about it, so you think about the workflow, she's not only having to log old tips, but she also has new tips coming in every day. So it's just this never-ending paper trail.
And in comparison, you mentioned she has 33 active cases. Compared to the other 32 cases, is she getting similar ones to those, or is this the most prominent one where she's getting the most tips, essentially, out of all those active cases she's working on?
I can't say. I really can't say. And I don't know if she'd be permitted to say either, but she did say that it would take her, she estimated it would take her roughly 5 to 7 years to sit down and read the entire file on the disappearance of Michael Donaghy. Yes. Wow.
So has she been on that for a certain length of time? Has she been working on this for 30 years? Has she been around that long? Or is this something that she's only been working on for a certain amount of time?
I'll actually have to double check. That's a really good question. I will check with her. So I know for the last few years she's been working on this case, and she actually inherited it from other detectives. And she said that they did a really good job. They worked really hard, and they're kind of still haunted at the fact that they had to retire without solving it. And I asked her as well. I was like, that's something that could happen to you. Like, I mean, that is the reality. She said, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just such an interesting case, the way that it's gripped Victoria and still stayed in prominence. And she says one of the reasons for this is Crystal Donaghy. So that's Michael's mother, who I've also been in contact with and I'm working with at the moment for this investigation. Now, she said the reason why most child cases stay in the public view, a lot of it, because it's a lot of that's family driven. So Crystal Donaghy has done an excellent job of keeping Michael's picture in circulation, for doing the walk every year, for keeping the website, keeping the tips alive. If you look at someone like Madeleine McCann, for example, Scotland Yard, now this is a quote from 2019, they'd spent about £11.75 million on this investigation. So obviously Vic PD does not have that kind of resources. And as Detective Robertson said, you know, cold cases aren't cheap. And also, like, I guess Detective Robertson and cold case units all over the country constantly have to fight for their place in the department, in the way that there's current cases going on, right? There's current things that they need to investigate, and there's very few resources for current cases. So I think she constantly has to make a case for the cold cases and allocating resources towards that. And she has been successful. So Vic PD petitions the city and were approved. They asked for one budget increase, and that was to employ a civilian to help Detective Robertson go through the paperwork.
Wow.
So I'll just explain the paper filing part of it. So basically there's about 120 boxes of paper that they literally, so all the notes, so we went missing in 1991. Most of the notes are on paper. We're talking like pen and paper, old school.
Wow.
So basically they have to file every single one like electronically. So they have to literally scan each page. And a lot of these things are repeats. A lot of them have no basis, but they have to take it very seriously. And Detective Robertson said, even though it slows her down at times and it can be a bit of a like laborious, she has to take every call to that tip line seriously. She has to log and make a paper trail for every single tip that comes in, even if it's a repeat. Every piece of paper in Michael Donaghy's file is important. It could be the potential thing that solves this case. So, I mean, it's a huge task. And, yes, she's been assigned a civilian to give her a hand with that. But, I mean, half the battle right now of Michael's case is actually getting this paper onto an electronic system, because if this was ever to go to court or anything like that, everything, according to police protocol, everything has to be filed and submitted electronically. They don't accept paper no more. So that's something to contend with.
Did she mention how long that would take? Now that she's got an extra person to be able to help her go through it, I mean, I'm sure that maybe halves the time it would take, but in terms of all those boxes worth of documents to get them electronically submitted, is there a time frame on how long that may take?
I'm not exactly sure, and that's a really good question, and I'll bring that to her. But you also have to think as well, if Detective Robertson got a lead on another missing persons case or an unsolved homicide here in Victoria, which she's responsible for, or any one of the other 32 cases on her desk, she would have to spend time following that. So you think about it. So this filing thing is just, you know, it's not an extra task, but it's part of like a huge workflow that she's got.
How's it been talking to Michael's mother? You mentioned you've been in contact with her throughout this investigation. I can imagine this is something that never leaves a person, even after all these years. How have you found she's been, and what is her current state of mind, I guess, after all these years?
she's still hopeful. She's still hopeful. She still believes that he's out there. And she's still really active and proactive as well. She's not sitting in her grief. So we spoke briefly about Child Find BC. So that's basically, they set up at fairs and schools and things like that. So where you can go there with your child and get their fingerprints taken and put in a registry, which I think's really, really valuable. So yeah, she's turning this whole thing into something that's gonna help people and make sure possibly that this doesn't happen to other kids.
In talking to her and talking to Detective Robinson and all the other investigating you're doing at the moment, Anna, have you uncovered any new leads, any other possible theories or anything that have only just recently come to light at all?
Yes. So Detective Robinson said that they're currently putting Michael's DNA through international databases. So that's really exciting. So that's kind of in the scenario, following the scenario that he was taken from here alive and then taken to another country, so for adoption, say. So if he's in another country and the process is his DNA, that's positive. Detective Robinson also said something really interesting. You know, time can help or time can hurt an investigation like this. And the way that the time can help is that, you know, two things she said that solve cases is a change in technology and a change in relationships. So, for example, like, you know, if you've got some information about someone in your immediate family but you don't feel comfortable coming forward, you know, time can help in the way that if they pass away, then that might, you know, compel you to come forward because there's no longer that relationship there. Time does hurt an investigation like this because witnesses pass away and also memories fade and augment over time. This whole case basically relies on eyewitnesses. We don't have, you know, we don't have DNA of the perpetrator. We don't have clues. We just have a few fuzzy kind of eyewitnesses of that day in the park. And Detective Robertson said that this case is the worst case scenario. This whole case relies on witness statements, and all she has is, "I just have a boy gone."
And another thing too, I can imagine that adds an extra layer to the tragedy of a child so young missing is that as a child or a person grows older, of course, their appearance generally changes, and of course, you can have computer generated images as best as you can, guessing what a person may look like at a certain age, but it may not be entirely accurate. Is that something that is constantly having to be done either by Detective Robinson or other people in the police that are having to try and do updated images of what they believe and get it out there? And is mother also kind of coming up with what they think so people can look out for what he may look like now?
I haven't spoken to Detective Robinson nor Crystal about the photo, the aging of the photos or anything like that. And I'm quite interested in this topic because I don't really believe it's very effective. I actually think it could be counterintuitive because you could age someone, you could do an age progression on a photo and it could actually look nothing like that person. But because you have this image of the dated image in your head, you could be, you know, kind of assessing situations based on this computer generated image. So that could lead you in completely the wrong way or lead you to ignore certain other people. Also, I think like the way you look is kind of affected by diet, climate, you know, like genes, you know, your lifestyle kind of thing. So I'm surprised that people do put such, you know, faith in age progression photos for investigations like this. Yeah.
So how do you counter that then? Because I mean, that's really kind of the only thing you've got outside of DNA evidence, isn't it? That if he is still out there, if he is out there somewhere in the community and he's to be found, I mean, how do you look for someone then who has gotten older, is 30 years older and doesn't look like clearly they look like when they went missing 30 years ago?
I think it's simply what this case is really relying on is keeping this case in the public eye. So keeping Michael Dunhy in the consciousness of all people in Victoria. I think that's the only way that's going to be solved. I also think employing the most, you know, the most applying new technology to this case. And as I said, this case is almost 30 years old. So we have a lot more at our fingertips than we did say 30 years ago. So for example, like putting him on all the databases, you've got 23andMe, that kind of thing, putting him on things like unsolved mysteries. Like, I mean, unsolved mysteries, for example, like using web sleuths, the whole web sleuth culture, you know, how can we engage that to you know, benefit this case? So kind of looking at, you know, a case that's so kind of old, but looking at what can we do today? What are the new tools that we have today that we can apply?
Mentioned before about possible leads and everything that may be out there. In terms of theories around how he disappeared, have any new ones come to light, either in talking to Detective Robinson or any of your investigations so far, Anna?
No, I think it's the same kind of theories. And I will say there are some, the satanic panic, and Jen Garrison wrote a fantastic article for Capital Daily on that, that was published a couple of months ago. But basically that's still alive and well. So there's a lot of discussion around that. Still, I still get tips along those lines. There's still, yeah, some crazy theories out there. But there's a lot of hope. There's also a lot of hope. A lot of people do believe that he's still out there. So that kind of aligns with the taken for adoption theory, or taken by someone living in Victoria.
In your investigating of this, Anna, as well, I think you mentioned when we spoke to you about this a couple of months ago that you're essentially Michael's age. How does that affect someone like yourself to think that this is someone you can relate to based purely on the fact that clearly that's the same age really as you, and you're trying to learn a lot about this and investigated it? I mean, how does that affect you when you're hearing these stories and yourself trying to get to the bottom of what's happening here?
I'll try not to cry, but yeah, it really bothers me, because I have a mother who's getting older, back home, in Australia, and for her and family back home who are aging, and for her to miss out on, you know, my baby making years and my wedding and like all that good stuff, you know, me finally finishing my higher education, you know, for her not to be there and my family and friends not to be there. I mean, that's absolutely heartbreaking for Crystal and Bruce to miss that, those stages in life. I think that is the worst part of this story for me.
You're still accepting leads and everything else along those lines, and of course still doing the investigation right now. So people, if they want to get in contact with you with any information on that, they're still able to do so at the moment?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm interested in anyone, if anyone has any new information, any old information. If anyone can tell me what, you know, how this has kind of affected their lives, their day-to-day lives, I'm interested in kind of, you know, the effect that Michael's disappearance had on the way people do things in Victoria, their sense of safety and security, how it shaped current policy. I'm looking at it from all angles. So if anyone has any information, just email me directly. My email is anna@capitaldaily.ca. That's anna@capitaldaily.ca.
Anna, it's always fascinating talking to you on the show about whatever topic we have you on for. Of course, we will be speaking to you again very, very soon. Best of luck in the investigation, and thanks very much for your time today on the program.
Thank you very much.
Coming up, all the day's news, plus would you name your child something odd just to get something free for 18 years? Find out where in the world one couple did and just exactly what they got for free. Next. Are you living in pain or stressed? Acupuncture is an amazing tool to help with your stress and anxiety and the aches and pain that come with it. Make the most of your extended health benefits before the end of the year. Book an appointment with acupuncture therapy. Do so before October 31st and get 20% off your first visit. Visit acupuncturetherapy.ca for more details. To today's news now, and after approving the first stage of what will likely be a new neighbourhood, Tofino Council may require the construction of a tsunami shelter to accommodate the new residents. These and other amenities are being mulled as requirements attached to the recent tentative approval of a new Campbell Street project. The development would create up to 104 units, half apartments and half detached homes, down from over 450 in a 2017 pitch that was then the district's biggest development proposal ever received. Wesley News reported that council is wary of overburdening the existing infrastructure with an influx of new, dense housing. A coalition of government and non-profit groups in Greater Victoria have launched a plan to house 200 people by 2021, Victoria Mayor Lisa Helps told CHECK. Under the plan, BC Housing would free up 110 units of supported housing by giving $750 to $825 per month rental supplements to current tenants who no longer need the full range of supports. Of course, the program hinges on the supplements being sufficient to help people get into a high-price, low-vacancy local rental market. Per PadMapper's October numbers, Victoria median one-bedrooms are the fourth priciest in Canada at $1,650, exactly double the maximum supplement amount. An owner of the BC Lions, David Brayley, has passed away. The club announced the passing of Brayley yesterday, saying that he had passed peacefully on Monday morning at his home in Burlington, Ontario. Lions president Lick Lalashaw described him as a proud and fiercely loyal owner, a champion of the Canadian Football League, and a leader for whom his love of the game and our country went hand in hand and spanned decades. Brayley previously served as the owner of the Hamilton Tiger Cats between 1989 to 1990 and the Toronto Argonauts from 2010 to 2015, as well as serving as an interim commissioner of the CFL and chair of its board of governors. He was inducted into the Canadian Football Hall of Fame in 2012. Both the Canadian Football League and the Vancouver Canucks released statements mourning the passing of Brayley, with the CFL saying he was bigger than life and the Canucks saying they were privileged to have been part of the Vancouver sports community with him. And before we go today, a pretty weird story coming out of Switzerland with a couple naming their daughter after their internet service provider in order to get 18 years of free Wi-Fi. According to the Toronto Sun, the internet provider Twiffy, or that could be Twi-Fi, I'm not too sure there, promised free Wi-Fi to any family who would name their child either Twiffia or Twiffius. Well, that could be Twifia or Twifius, one of those. The anonymous Swiss couple, aged 30 and 35, took them up on the offer after initially dismissing it as a joke, with the dad saying there were much worse names out there. For those wondering, they went with the Twiffia Twifia name, and the couple says that they will put away the money they save from not paying Wi-Fi each month into an account for their daughter to use once she turns 18. Now, this almost sounds a little bit too good to be true, and there's a catch to this, which I'm sure you're wondering about. The family actually didn't name her, well, her first name. It's her middle name in which they used the name, and apparently that counted in order to get this promotion. Now, I'm going to call bull on that one. I think that's ridiculous because, you know, a middle name is just a middle name. Often some people don't even have middle names. So does that really count? I mean, if it's that easy to get something for free for 18 years to just use a middle name as something like that, then I'll do it. I don't even have children, but hey, I'll do it one day. Note to Canadian Wi-Fi companies, if you're listening today, I will do it in the future when that day eventually comes. And that's it today for the Capital Daily Podcast for Tuesday, October 27th, 2020. Big congratulations to Mary McArthur for winning last week's Capital Daily Photo Competition for her great shot of her mother and two friends taking the day World War II ended in Victoria. It's a fantastic shot. If you want to see it, check out today's Capital Daily newsletter and pay attention to the end of this episode or go back and listen to the very beginning if you want to find out how you can enter this week's competition and be congratulated on air just like Mary was. My name is Ben Waterworth, and as a say in Australia, we're going to Bonnie Doon. Thanks for tuning in, and I will speak to you tomorrow. Today's edition of the Capital Daily Podcast is brought to you by Acupuncture Therapy. Book before October 31st and get 20% off your first visit. Visit acupuncturetherapy.ca for more details. Introducing the Capital Daily's Weekly Photo Challenge. Each week, our team will post a weekly photo theme in Monday's Capital Daily newsletter, as well as announcing it right here on the podcast, with winners receiving gift cards to local Victoria businesses around town. This week's theme is Halloween, where we are asking for photos of your best decor, costumes, or spooky places around the island. To enter, simply email us your photo or post it directly to your own social media account. For more details, check out Monday's Capital Daily newsletter.